Can Myanmar return to democracy? A year after the military coup, public institutions and the economy have collapsed, and international diplomatic pressure has stalled. So how long can the army resist giving power back to the people? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Elizabeth Peranam. A year ago, Myanmar's transition to democracy ended when the military seized power. The army has ignored international pressure to reinstate civilian rule. The United Nations is demanding more sanctions against the junta, calling it a criminal enterprise. Well, this video was one of the first signs of the army takeover and a memorable image of that day. A fitness instructor doing her exercises while tanks rolled into the capital, Naypyidaw. Elected leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi, were arrested and jailed. Military commander Min Aung Hlaing imposed a state of emergency and declared himself prime minister. Well, the coup triggered some of the biggest protests in Myanmar's history. The military's response was swift and violent. Some cities held small demonstrations on Tuesday's anniversary, but most marked the coup with silent strikes as part of a campaign of civil disobedience. State media say military leader Min Aung Hlaing has extended the state of emergency for another 6 months. He's ignored a plan by the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, to restore democracy. People in Myanmar have been speaking to our correspondent, Tony Cheng.
To drive around Myanmar's cities, everyday life might look like it's normal. But look a little closer. Roads are closed with barriers, barricaded military positions, and uniformed soldiers on the streets.
I saw the army destroy the protests. After that, I was very afraid. That's why I'm scared to go out again. But there were more protests beside my house. So I joined. If I feel safe, I would join the protests.
Myanmar has been ravaged by COVID-19 in the past 12 months. The situation intensified after the military targeted medical workers for their involvement in protests and a civil disobedience movement. Many were arrested, others fled into hiding. Today, even basic healthcare services are scarce.
I won't forget the day that health workers were arrested and treated very badly by the army. They even killed a medical student. That's why I won't return to the hospital.
In the cities, food remains plentiful, but prices have risen sharply. Elsewhere, supplies and production have run dangerously low. The World Food Programme estimates it needs to provide food for 4 million people across Myanmar in 2022, four times the number before the coup. The economy has gone into freefall, banks limit withdrawals, and foreign investment is pulling out fast.
Many people lose their jobs, and it is impacting to the labour market. And also, many people are jobless, but the many job seekers are getting the job but being paid less than normal.
Even basic services like trains and buses are failing. The nationwide rail network has ground to a halt after workers joined the civil disobedience movement. And bus prices have tripled as operators abandon standardized rules.
In my opinion, if we get rid of army rule, transport services would go back to normal, with properly working buses and normal ticket prices.
Historically, the people of Myanmar are used to military rule. But after a decade of progress and development, the last 12 months is leaving many feeling as if they're returning to the past. Tony Cheng, Al Jazeera.
Well, let's bring in our guests. In the Thai capital, Bangkok, is Debbie Stothard, founder and coordinator of ASEAN Burma. That's a network of organisations working on human rights and democracy in Myanmar. In London, Ronan Lee, fellow at Loughborough University London and author of the book Myanmar's Rohingya Genocide. And in Vancouver in Canada, we have Yasmin Ullah, a Rohingya human rights activist. A very warm welcome to the programme. And I'll start with you, Ms. Stothard, in Bangkok. Given the state of the country, has the military coup been a failure?
Oh, Elizabeth, this coup has been a tragic failure, tragic for the people in the country, but definitely a failure for the junta. Senior General Min Aung Hlaing and his military cronies certainly did not expect the level of determination and sustained resistance, mainly from young people and women leading this movement. They still have not been able to gain territorial control of the country a year after trying to seize power.
And Mr. Lee, if we look at the resistance that Ms. Stothard has spoken about to the military coup, and that resistance has led to so much violence in many parts of the country now, the departing UN Special Envoy to Myanmar has said that the country is on the verge of civil war. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. The simple reality is that the Myanmar military has used every tool of violence and oppression at its disposal to try and convince the people of Myanmar to just quietly accept, to acquiesce to a military coup. They've had 12 months, and after 12 months, they're still not in control of the country. I mean, the coup has been a disaster for the military. It's been tragic for the people of Myanmar, but this is by no means a successful coup for the military. 12 months and they still cannot embed the coup. The question that seriously must be asked now really is, if they can't achieve that in 12 months, can they ever? And that's a call to the international community, to the UN Security Council, to get involved in this, because what seems to be happening is that the military cannot win. The people aren't prepared to let them win, understandably, but the military are prepared to fight to the last person standing in Myanmar to have a chance of winning. And we just simply should not allow that to occur.
And there are so many people in Myanmar that also seem to be willing to fight to the very last person. Yasmin Ullah in Vancouver, has the military coup, I mean, it has been devastating and a disaster for most of the people in Myanmar who are against it, but what impact has it had on the country's ethnic minorities like the Rohingya?
Oh, wow, it's just indescribable. We've had the military targeting us with, you know, all kinds of violence and intends to destroy the entire communities for many, many decades. And this is just, it's for ethnic community, it's just another day of being part of the ethnic communities. Just recently, just within this month alone, there has been a lot of arrest and penalization of movements for Rohingya. We have 200,000 people, Rohingya, are still stuck in apartheid-like conditions in internment camps, who are not receiving the aid and, you know, proper help from outside, nor, you know, the authorities involved. And the conditions have just worsened and worsened for, you know, for Rohingya people and other ethnic communities. It's just been hell.
And what we're seeing increasingly is that, you know, people who are against the military coup are joining the ranks of different ethnic armed groups around the country and challenging the military. We've seen in recent months the military has lost control over territory, including in Chin and Rakhine states, the Sagaing region, the Magway division. Deborah Stothard, how does that impact the military's hold on the country? How stretched is the military right now? How much pressure is it under?
Well, the junta is relying on airstrikes now on civilian areas, including recently an airstrike on Loy Kaw, the biggest city, the state capital of Kaya or Kareni state. So what has happened is that besides launching all, stretching out all their human resources to attack people, the military has also lost thousands of defectors, soldiers and police who have defected from the junta because they cannot bear what's going on. And instead, the military is now recalling retired veterans to active duty and forcing soldiers, wives and children to do military training. What this is telling us is that they have locked themselves, as Ronan says, on a path to fight till the last person standing. They are not willing to make any compromise or show any mercy. And this in itself has also forced the civilian population to realize that they have two choices, fight or flee. And most of them cannot run away. So folks are being forced to stand there, to fight back in order to guarantee their own survival. But let's also remember that what we are facing is the scale of atrocity crimes and conflict that since September, every month, the number of attacks hurting people, military attacks harming people in Myanmar has actually been more than Afghanistan and Syria combined. That's how serious the conflict is.
Absolutely. Thousands of civilians have been killed, around 1,500 in the protests that followed the military coup, often peaceful protests, around a third of those who were in custody and from torture. But we've had many others who've been killed in the fighting that's been going on in the countryside, often they're civilians. Mr. Lee, what is it going to take, you know, for the international community to do more? We have had the United States, Britain and Canada imposing new sanctions on Myanmar's military after the past year of chaos. They've been blacklisting more people who are linked to the junta. Do you see these latest round of sanctions making any difference to what's been happening in the country over the past year?
Well, sanctions that target the military's economic base will certainly help. But the international community needs to do much more than impose sanctions. There needs to be a global arms embargo on Myanmar. I mean, the Myanmar military should not be able today and tomorrow and next week to continue to buy weapons to turn on its own people. And that's the responsibility of the United Nations Security Council. And there hasn't been a vote on that at the Security Council. It's time the USA and the UK and others stepped up and put this to a vote at the United Nations Security Council. And let's actually work out where the political will is for action and where it isn't. And if the problem here is that China would threaten a veto or would veto, then this becomes China's political problem. Now, China won't want that, because China has a very long land border with Myanmar. It doesn't want a catastrophe next door, but it's philosophically against intervention if it can avoid it. And it will be signalling perhaps to others that it might veto, but I'm not sure that it will in the current circumstances. The atrocities that we saw from the Myanmar military during December, I mean, burning alive 31 people who were fleeing violence. I mean, that was on Christmas Eve. There was a peaceful protest in Yangon during December. The military drove a truck at the protesters at full speed. Other instances in other parts of the country where we've seen collective punishment of civilians. So if there was militia action against the military, and the military are losing quite often when these militias take them on, they punished the local community by burning alive 11 people, including children. I mean, this is a brutal and cruel military that should not be in power in Myanmar.
And there are a number of people who are saying that there needs to be there can't be any weapons or money being supplied to the military junta. But who is it that is supplying those weapons and money, Mr. Lee?
Well, China and Russia are selling weapons, among others, to the junta. I mean, China's the big arms supplier to the junta. Russia has also emerged, particularly since the coup, as quite involved in terms of providing arms to the junta within Myanmar. I mean, Russia gains access to a port on the Bay of Bengal because of that. But Russia doesn't share a border with Myanmar. So Russia really cares a lot less than China does. I don't think China wants... China had indicated that it was not happy with the fact of the coup, whatever about the situation afterwards. I'm not sure China wants that to face the potential of years and years of catastrophe in a country where it shares a 1,500-kilometre land border. I mean, people will flee across that border, and that will be a problem for China. I mean, I think it's in China's interests as much as it's in the interests of the people of Myanmar to resolve this as quickly as possible.
And I want to talk just a little bit about how we've got here, you know, to this point, because how much has the international, Yasminullah, I'll bring you in here now, how much do you think the international community's lack of action so far has been reminiscent of what happened, you know, the lack of the response or lack thereof during the 2016-17 Rohingya crisis, when condemnation wasn't matched with actions? And how much do you think that lack of action has contributed to the military's decision to launch the current coup, you know, convinced that it might face condemnation, but little else from the UN or Western governments, as Mr. Lee has been writing?
Well, there are a lot of elements of economic interest within Myanmar, and there are very specific enterprises, including the MEHL, MEC, and the military oil and gas company that have been actually getting revenues from the foreign investors. That includes the US, Canada, South Korea, and many other democratic nations that actually did not halt the investment or revenues flow into Myanmar military companies during or after 2017 genocidal campaign. So in that case, the genocide of Rohingya people has proven to be quite profitable to the Myanmar military because it actually did not stop foreign companies and international community from investing within Myanmar, from actually, you know, adding on to the power and the impunity within the country. And that actually resulted in so many different deterioration within the domestic institutions within Myanmar. And that includes, you know, criminal justice system. And it actually has helped embolden the Myanmar military so much that it actually, you know, today, we're seeing the coup and the cycle of violence just never ending.
We have seen in the last, just recently, Debbie Stothard, we've had, you know, energy companies, Chevron, Total, at least, pulling out of Myanmar. Are you hopeful by those sort of corporate actions? Do you think that they could lead to more and lead to some more pressure on the military, given that the military does earn a lot of revenue from those companies?
Well, let's face the fact that Chevron, Total, and also Woodside Australia announced their withdrawal from the country, also because the reputational and operational risks they were facing outweighed any benefits or profits they could get now or in the future. And that's because the junta itself has wrecked the economic infrastructure of the country. But between now and 6 months ahead when they actually pull out, they are scheduled to hand over a couple of $100 million of revenue to Myanmar Oil and Gas Enterprise, which is controlled by the junta. And this is why we've been advocating for sanctions, so that these companies are compelled to put those revenues in a trust account instead of handing it over to the junta, because that money could be used to kill more people. And I just want to go back to what Ronan Lee was saying about China. On the 28th of January, China's representative at the UN Security Council shocked us all by talking about the urgency of halting violence in Myanmar. So the Beijing is finally admitting that what is happening in the country does affect China. And hopefully China will back up those concerns by not supplying any more weapons. So I think the space is now there, the Security Council, for some type of action to be taken. And we shouldn't be afraid of countries exercising any veto on Burma, Myanmar. If they do, then it's time for them to actually own their support for this brutal junta instead of trying to prevent anything from being tabled in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, really interesting for China to make that comment, saying that there was that urgent need to stop the violence in Myanmar. Again, given, you know, what does that mean for its part? And again, Ronan Lee, is this the time, you know, to strike while the iron's hot? Is China signalling that perhaps it will use its veto power to vote in a way that you wouldn't expect it to at the UN Security Council?
Well, I think when the coup was launched, the Chinese ambassador to Myanmar made a very strong public statement for a Chinese ambassador, which was that the coup was not in China's interests. And that was a strong signal at that time, that China did not want to encourage the coup and was I think, pushing for there to be a negotiated settlement. The Chinese authorities had a very good relationship with Aung San Suu Kyi and the National League for Democracy government. So they weren't keen on a coup. I think the issue, though, now for China is that what they're faced with is a situation that is a prolonged conflict within Myanmar on its doorstep. That's the choice. The choice is to continue backing the military and accept that there'll be a prolonged conflict because the military won't go quietly, or take action and bring this to a head sooner and let the people of Myanmar be the people who be the ones who determine who governs their country. And the alternate for China is they can have peace within Myanmar with the people determining who's in charge, or they can have chaos by continuing to back the military. I think it's insightful, too, that those major multinationals are announcing now that they're withdrawing, because I think in some ways that's an indication that they see the writing on the wall, too. They see that the military is likely to lose, and they want to be able to have a working relationship with the new civilian government in the future. Well, and that's a positive sign.
Yeah, absolutely. Yasmin Ullo, what about ASEAN's role in all of this? You know, Myanmar is a member. Do you see it playing a more effective role in stopping the violence at the moment?
I unfortunately don't, but it does not mean that we cannot continue to engage them. I think there needs to be more international pressure that mounting, you know, upon ASEAN to actually do more, especially because of the Thai-Burma border, and you know, because of the airstrikes and many waves of violence that have happened. There are many roles that ASEAN can play in.
Sure.
At the very least, ensuring that people are actually kept safe.
And I want to ask a question, you know, to Debbie Stothard, because she's actually in Bangkok, and Bangkok and Thailand has been the one of the supporters, you know, in ASEAN of the military. But while there is so much violence along the border and you have thousands of people crossing into Thailand from Myanmar, which Thailand doesn't want, Can you see the Thai authorities changing their view on their support for the military junta?
I think at this point, when we're talking about pressure on the junta by the international community, there also needs to be active encouragement and pressure for ASEAN to get its act together. And in this case, allowing humanitarian aid, millions and millions of dollars of humanitarian aid to flow across Thai borders towards communities in urgent need in Burma also means a potential of economic recovery in a country that's already hit by the COVID pandemic. So I think it potentially is a win-win situation mm-hmm. for Thailand. It's not in Thailand's interest for chaos to reign in Myanmar because of the border situation, because of the fact that alongside this violence, there's also a COVID pandemic in progress that's actually out of control in Burma, Myanmar. So it's in Thailand's interest to actually contribute to a buffer zone, a safe buffer zone for ethnic and displaced people. Mm-hmm. Because what we have seen in the past few months is when the military junta does artillery fire, launches mortar fire on people in Karen State, in Kaya State, on the border areas, some of that has actually affected Thai people on the Thai side. So, yeah. So I think in terms of human security, in terms of economic stability, in terms of dealing with the COVID pandemic, it's actually in Thailand's interest to work with the rest of international community to ease the situation.
Well, let's see if these countries such as Thailand and China can work not only in their own interests, but most importantly in the interest of the people of Myanmar. I'm afraid we have run out of time, but I want to thank all of you for this discussion. That is Debbie Stothard, Ronan Lee and Yasmin Ullah. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJ Inside Story. From me, Elizabeth Paranam, and the whole team here, bye for now.